Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, the Cubs center fielder Albert Almora joins us on McNeil and Parkins on The Score. He does it now from Atlanta. What's up, Albert?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Can't complain, you know. Just got to Atlanta here. I'm at the ballpark right now, so enjoying it up.
All right, so let's get into the serious issues facing our society and the Cubs, and that is apparently Ben Zobrist's shoe color. What the hell's going on here with this?
I don't know. I don't know much. Nothing's really happened to me, but I did see what Benny put up, and it was from a, being a, you know, on the standpoint of being his teammate and seeing what, you know, the reasons why he gave. It was really awesome. It was awesome to I mean, I went up to him. I was like, dude, that was incredible. I mean, and we're not trying to get into an argument here with MLB. We're just voicing our opinion, and rightfully so.
And did you see that apparently they also are taking issue with Wilson Contreras and the Venezuelan flag sleeve that he wears?
Yeah, Willie told me that they told him something about that as well. So I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do or what the reasoning behind it is. But I'm sure our union and our them are in talks to try to work something out.
I guess from where I would sit, I kind of associate that. Like, I didn't notice the shoes, to be honest with you. And it's kind of odd that they're going after Ben Zobrist of all people for this. But like, the sleeve for Willie, it's like, that's a cool thing that connects him to his home country. And I know I've talked to him about it before. He's very proud of where he comes from, and he tries to raise awareness for the problems that happened in Venezuela. So why would you think this would be an issue when none of this seems malicious from a player wanting to express a little bit of individuality?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they're trying to do. And I know last year he did it, and no one said anything, and you know, and he's doing it for a good reason. He's not doing it just to show off or whatever the reason may be. He's doing it because what's going on in that country is tough, and he's from there and loves his country. And I mean, I respect that. I don't see any guys, you know, going doing something for a wrong reason. I think if they do have different color cleats, most of the time it's to spread awareness for something, or, you know, in memory of a family member or whatnot. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on, and it's really unfortunate.
Have you ever tried to wear something a little bit different?
No, but I'm, you know, scared when I heard that news, and it makes you think, are my shoes okay, you know? But being selfish, I would like to, if they are going to implement that such rule, let us know in the off season, just in case, you know, we're making, you know, our design shoes from our companies or whatever, and it's tough. It's tough once they're already done, and you hear about it in May that you're not gonna be able to wear them anymore. That's just for the guys that went all out with different colors and whatnot.
We're talking to Albert Almora here on The Score. Let's talk about yesterday's game for a little bit. So you come up in the ninth, you're down two, there's two runners on, you've hit a home run already, you get the broken bat single to extend the game. Is it hard in that spot to block out the urge to try to be a hero because it's a walk-off home run scenario?
It's obviously that runs, it goes through your mind as soon as your name gets called and you have the chance to do that. But I think once you step in the box, that kind of thought process goes away, and I try to stay within myself and stick with the same approach and the same plan that I've had all game.
And then when you've hit a home run earlier in the game, because a lot of people online or whatever were saying, wow, Albert Almora hit a home run off a righty. Is that does that mean something extra to you, showing that you can have that success against a right-handed pitcher?
There's all these conversations, honestly, about the right-handed pitching. It's starting to not get to me, but it's it's comical already because I've never thought to myself that I struggled against right-handed pitching. I just I don't know that so, I don't know somehow that came up, but if you look, I hate to sound like this, but if you look at all my numbers and whatnot, I've never had would you say a struggle with that. I mean, I don't know. So to me, it's just another pitcher, man. I don't care who I'm facing.
Okay, so I don't want to belabor the point if it's something that frustrates you, but like it, Joe, right? He's got to play everybody. We've talked to you about, you know, playing time and playing every day and how fans want you to play every day and all of that. But
yeah,
it feels pretty safe, right? If there's a lefty out there, you're going to be in the lineup, and then sometimes you're in the lineup against righties. But I personally am struggling to figure out like what types of righties you'll play against and what types of righties you'll sit against.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just see the text. I see the lineup text, and I'm in there. If I'm not, then I'm not. I don't know either.
Okay, because there's no like profile of right-handed pitcher that you feel like you struggle against or excel against.
No, I don't. I know last year I didn't start against Teron, the guy we faced yesterday. I started this year. I mean, I don't know what. That's something you got to ask Joe. I don't ask any questions. I just play.
For sure. And then just in terms of the splits, because I'm looking at them right now for this year, against lefties, your OPS is over 950, right? You crush the ball against lefties. And against righties, it's a little under 700, but your batting average is still like 280. It's 279. So it's not like you're bad against righties. So is that what you're talking about? It's like, sure, I may be better against lefties, but it's a misnomer that you can't hit righties.
Oh, I just think sometimes those numbers fluctuate the way they do just because I face righties more than I face lefties or vice versa. You know what I mean? It's if I have – maybe I have more hits against right-handed pitching, but since I don't have as much as bats against lefties, maybe those less hits have a higher number. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. I really don't think about any of that stuff. I'm confident in the player that I am. I don't care who's pitching, and I trust myself, and I know the type of player that I am, and I go off that.
We're talking to Albert Almora here on The Score. Do you have any thoughts as a player that's going to be in the league for a long time about the law that was passed yesterday that now it looks like sports gambling? It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when sports gambling becomes legal. Do you have any thoughts on that as a player?
No, you know what? That's a simple response for me, and it's a simple thing that I think of. It's like, hey, man, we're told that we can't gamble here, and no matter if it's legal or illegal anywhere. So it's simple for me. I don't even think about it. I don't read up much on it. So it's not my place, man. I play baseball, and I ain't dealing with any of that.
No, makes sense. You fantasy football player, NCAA pool, anything like that?
No, you know what? I love when football season starts because I get to be in the draft room with all the guys, and I'm the one putting up the names on the board. But I'm not. I don't have my own team. I just like messing around with the guys and having a good time.
You're the like the auctioneer. Like you're the guy who does the board. You don't have a team?
No. I'm the guy that lets the guys know, like, hey, you're up next. You have the pick, and then I'm the one that writes the name down or puts the sticker. We do it right, man. I think our travel secretary hooks us up, and we have like the stickers of everybody's available, and we have a great time.
Who's the best fantasy football player on the Cubs, and who's the worst?
Like I said, I don't know who won last year or anything. I was just there for that day, and that was it. I don't know who won or how it worked out. I love that process.
We're talking to Albert Almora here on The Score. I saw something on a TV broadcast a couple days ago that I wanted to ask you about. It was Joe and Ian Happ before the game, like right before the game, and they're doing their, it looked like meditation, breathing exercises, that like right in the dugout right before the game. Do you have any like routine that you have to do to get you in the right headspace before a game starts, or you know that 5 minutes before first pitch? What's Albert Almora doing?
Doing all my handshakes with all my teammates. I think I know what you're talking about. That's just what him and what Joe and Ian do before games, as their like little handshake. But right 5 minutes right before game time, I'm looking for teammates to get pumped and get excited to play a big league ball game, man. It's just having fun.
Who comes up with all the handshakes?
I think it's a mixture. I have some from a couple years ago, and I think me and Caratini just made one. It's simple, but I think it's between both of us. We kind of just come up with it on the fly. Like, I know KB and I have one, and we just added something to it just because that's what we felt at the time, and we just stuck with it.
Is it hard to remember? Like, how many different handshakes do you have with different teammates?
So how many position players? I think we have 11 position players. I think I have one with each and every one of them. So it's not hard at all. It sounds like it's going to be difficult, but no, it's simple.
Want to talk to you about just the state of the team right now. Like, the Joe was on the station earlier today, and he's talking about how, you know, there's every part of the team has this unbelievable upside, right? Like, the offense can be great and carry you guys. The starting pitching can be great. The defense can be great. And it's a matter of when all of those things click, how good you guys can be. Do you feel that's just a matter of time before everyone's firing at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. I've said it all year. I mean, we've been winning games, we've been playing well, and we haven't, I use the term exploded in the sense of we haven't gelled together, you know, completely. And, I mean, we've been playing really good baseball. I feel the game we played yesterday was, you know, it was great. I mean, we lost, but, hey, man, we battled to the last second. And that's all you could ask for.
When you're in the field and a starter is struggling out there with control and walking too many guys, is that a thing that's frustrating, or do you know how difficult it is? Because when you're playing Little League or something, it's like, hey, just throw a strike, let us catch it, that sort of thing. What's going through your mind when your starters are struggling like that?
I'll never think it's easy. What they're doing is easy. So, we just gotta wear it. You know, he's trying his hardest, so we're obviously out there. We're ready for him ready to help him out whenever we can. And it's just, I don't expect them when we're hitting to expect us to get a hit every time. But you know, it's the same thing. They're doing their best. They have a game plan, and they're human.
Hey, have you got that lineup text tonight?
Oh yeah, we got it yesterday.
Oh, so are you in?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's public news, but yeah, I'm in there, man.
I mean, listen, Joe said that lineup talk is unsophisticated, so it doesn't matter if you tell us who's in the lineup, right? It doesn't matter on the batting order. It's just something that fans like to know.
Yeah, I guess you're right. When it comes down to the injured players, that's more where I won't say much. Just let the guys come up with that, but yeah, I'll play it, man.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you, man. Have a good road trip. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. See you.
All right, that's Albert Elmora with us on The Score. It's a cool customer, but it's, you know, the numbers for lefties and righties, it's a thing. I get why it frustrates him, but Joe basically plays him against every lefty. I think the exception is one time that he hasn't started against a lefty. There are more right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers in baseball, obviously, but you look at the numbers, it's pretty drastic. 279 batting average against righties, 333 against lefties, 329 OBP against righties, 400 against lefties. Slugging is a 200 percentage difference, 353 versus 556. I mean, he's a fine hitter against righties, and he's a great hitter against lefties. And Joe's trying to maximize the situation for these guys to succeed in, but he's not going to play in all that spot. But, I mean, I can tell that narrative, if you will, has frustrated him, but the narrative is based in fact. He doesn't hit as well, especially for power, against right-handed pitching as he does left-handed pitching. We got Will Perdue coming up in just a little bit. He'll be joining us in studio, but we can put a postscript on the Cubs conversation, especially with those starting pitchers and Yu Darvish's big start coming up tonight. And we've got Fleetwood Mac tickets and U2 tickets to give away before we're out of here, plus two chances to win $1,000 as part of our national cash contest. It's McNeil and Parkins on The Score. All right, let's address something here. It's McNeil and Parkins on The Score, brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at indeed.com/hire. We got Will Perdue coming in studio in 5 minutes. And the Illinois State Senator, who is the chairman of the Gaming Committee for the state of Illinois, Steve Stottleman, we're hoping he's going to join us at 3 o'clock today. I'm going to read some feedback that I got on the Albert Almora conversation. On Twitter from C. Human. How many uncomfortable questions can you possibly ask Almora Jr.? On the text line. Danny, that was an uncomfortable interview. Clearly he wasn't thrilled with your questions. That's from Marty. Next texter. Why do you push so hard, Parkins? It's uncomfortable for the listener and the guest. And then, way to go, Parkins. Now you got this stuff in Almora's head. Hope you didn't screw him up.
Hey, I ran into O.J. Simpson the other night. How about that?
I personally did not find that awkward in any way. Now, I will admit that I have a higher tolerance for this than most. But I clearly have a higher tolerance for it than you. And you guys need to up your tolerance a little bit. Albert Almora, I'm a fan of his. I did an hour with him at the steakhouse last year. I was the one who requested him. He was on my list of players that I'd like to talk to for a weekly visit this year. He has played pick a player. I am not saying that we have a great relationship. We have never talked outside of the clubhouse or the radio show. But, like, it's not like I have any sort of personal vendetta against him. But he's a paid contributor to come on a radio show. His splits for his career, so I just gave him the ones this year. His splits for his career against righties, he has a .306 on base percentage against righties. He has a .382 on base percentage against lefties. His slugging percentage is over 100 points higher for his career against righties than lefties. That is not completely abnormal, right? Righty-righty matchups as opposed to cross-hand matchups, righty-lefty. But to act as if it is not a story when Albert Almora himself is like, yeah, I'm kind of tired of these questions. Yeah, I didn't start against Tehran last year, but I did start against him yesterday. Like, it is 100% a storyline with Albert Almora that he is often not in the lineup against righties. And if Cubs fans want him to play every day, like many of you do, and the majority of starting pitchers are right-handed, I don't really know what to do there other than quote some stats to him, ask him about what types of righties he will face, if he has any knowledge or insight that he can share about when he does or does not expect to play against righties. Like, I don't really know what to do other than just ask the questions. And if he doesn't want to answer them, that's his prerogative. But we're kind of doing a little tap dance there, right? Like, my job is to ask, his job is to answer, and away we go and we talk about other stuff. But I did not find that awkward or uncomfortable at all. I found it to just be kind of what we do here. Shane, Shep, Z-Pack.
I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah. But like, I didn't see it at all, and then I got all that feedback after the interview, and I was caught off guard by it. So am I wrong here? Tell me if I'm wrong.
It's almost like some people and some of our listeners, if something isn't said with smiles and laughter, that, oh my God, it's so tenuous in there. It's so awful. Oh my goodness. They don't sense the, yeah, it's a conversation. And Albert Almora Jr. is going to be more happy or more open when he's speaking about, oh, your wife is pregnant with your second son. You're excited about that. Yeah, that's great. Albert, do you think you don't play enough? You expect him to have the same joy in his voice when you ask tougher questions, and people think it gets, like, contentious in it. And it's, yeah, maybe it's not as open and as fun as part of his other parts of his interviews are, but I don't think it's any bad blood between anyone.
No, it's certainly not bad blood, but just, I didn't even feel it as uncomfortable. I did not take that as uncomfortable at all.
Danny, I might be breaking some kind of news to you here, but listeners to The Score and listeners to everybody are going to find any single way they can to make you look bad.
Okay.
They want you to look bad. And they're mean, and they have their thumbs behind their cell phones, and they say whatever the hell they want. Maybe Almora was a little bit more reserved today than he usually is, but if you want to credit to a technical aspect, it was a spotty reception, and maybe he couldn't hear everything you were saying. I will be an Almora apologist and a Parkins apologist on this one. It was fine.
Okay. I normally will be like, yeah, I messed that one up, or yeah, that was good. And I'm normally not quite as out of sync with the feedback of a conversation. To me, that conversation was fine. Not spectacular in any way, not bad in any way, not uncomfortable in any way. And people were like coming back at it. I was like, oh, huh. So I wanted to examine that a little bit. We'll get an update from Kevin Zipak, and then Will Perdue is going to join me in studio. We'll see if he's in this upcoming 10-part Jordan 30 for 30, sports gambling, and, of course, the draft lottery for the Bulls and the NBA playoffs. Will Perdue in studio for the next half hour on The Score.
Yes, we're all hoping the fix is in. The lottery is in Chicago, so, of course, the Bulls will get the number one overall pick. That's how it works, correct? Make sure he's turn my mic on. Yep, Will. Oh, beautiful. Well, thank
listen,
you.
But I want to, before we go there, let me make something very clear.
Yeah. Will Perdue in studio.
And I'll group us together on this one. We don't need anybody else's help looking bad. You do that on your own. I do that on my own.
Physically or with radio?
Both.
Okay. Yeah,
but
thank you.
It is good that your guys got your back.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
As they're shoving chocolate chip cookies in their mouth.
Yeah, well, hey, it's a radio station. Well, we're not finely tuned athletes. If we're not eating unhealthy food, we're not really doing radio.
Well, they said they're actually doing a comparison between Chips Ahoy and what was the other one?
Oh, Blind Taste Test.
Matt's Cookies.
What was it again?
Matt's.
Matt's.
Well, thanks for including
it's
me.
It's not really a blind taste test because we could see the packaging.
Mm. Well, you're just doing a taste test of
yeah,
different.
But it's still, yeah. it's your preference regardless if you can see the packaging or not.
Radio's the best.
That's just
it?
Like I always wondered, how can you possibly not tell the difference between Pepsi and Coke?
Right.
They're so significantly different. That's we true. Did a blind taste test.
Yeah, one is good and the other isn't. and people were saying, by the way, Parkins, that interview with Al Morrow was not uncomfortable. However, your second conversation with Zach LaVine, very uncomfortable. That's true. Because he had just woken up, and I will fully concede and said so at the time. That was an uncomfortable conversation.
Shake out the cobwebs, baby.
That's right. Well, first of all, Will Perdue, are you in this 10-part Jordan 30 for 30 that's coming up?
I hope so, because if I am, then obviously there's some residual checks that should be coming my way.
I mean, 10 parts on your guy, Mike.
Well, I think that tells you still the how people are so enamored with him.
Yeah.
That to this day, I mean, and don't tell me his last game was, you know, with the Wizards. Was the following. His last game with the Bulls was, what, 90?
98.
Yeah. So we're going on 20 years.
Yeah.
And people, and I promise you, this 10-part series will probably be some of the highest rated 30 for 30s that they'll have, period.
Yeah. I laughed when I saw the news today because they did 5 parts on O.J. Simpson and race in America.
Hey, I ran into O.J. Simpson the other night. How about that?
Thank you, Brent Musburger. 5 parts to tackle race in America and the trial of the century. But MJ needs 10 parts.
And that's what I'm interested in, because how much of that is actually going to be basketball and how much of that is actually going to be off the court stuff?
Yeah.
Because it's the interesting thing is I can only imagine if there was social media back then the way there is now. Listen, the guy was a god, but at the same time, the media protected him. And because nobody wanted to be on his bad side, because the last thing you wanted to be was ostracized from getting comments, quotes, being trusted by him. So they protected him. I mean, I'm not saying the dude was a bad dude, but he also wasn't an angel. But at the end of the day, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they actually show and if any of that is actually stuff that was not public knowledge prior to this 10-part series.
What are you willing to tell us about that?
Well, one of the things I always enjoyed was that, and since gambling is all over the news now, we all know how he loved the gamble. But he also had the second time through the league after baseball, he had all the security guys travel with him. But we used to joke because the security guys actually worked for free because he paid each one of them. But I think it was written in their contract that they had to play cards with him, and they always lost. So basically he paid them, and then they basically just paid him right back when they lost everything when they played cards on the road together.
Jordan's security detail had it in their contracts.
I'm not saying it did.
Yeah.
But basically it was, and we all know the guys and they're great guys, but we would see him on the road. You'd never see him at night because MJ hardly ever went out. He had everything come to him, and they would just sit in his room and play cards all night. And we would go to shoot around and you'd see one of the security guys and Mike would be bopping up, and you knew he was up late when he was bopping around talking trash because that's how he got himself going. And then we'd see the security guys and be like, yo, man, what time did you guys stay up playing cards till? He goes, well, I think I called it a night about 4:30 and he was still rolling and, you know, full steam ahead. Like, we got a game tonight. Yeah, he'll just sleep during the day. He'll be fine. And then he'll go out and I remember where were we? Charlotte dropped 38 on somebody and we win by 25. I remember when I got traded to San Antonio and one of my first meetings with David Robinson, I basically fly down, I get traded, I fly down, basically get on the bus. We're taking the bus from San Antonio over to Austin to prepare for training camp. David Robinson sits down, looks at me, and he goes, Michael Jordan has a deal with the devil. I'm like, what are you talking about? They had just done the Olympic team.
Yeah.
Where everybody knows the whole story. I mean, those guys basically slept 2 hours a day.
Right.
I mean, they basically gambled all night. Then they basically went back to the room and showered, put on their practice gear, went to practice, came back, put on their golf gear, went and played golf, came back, went and gambled all night. And that was cyclical. And David Robinson was like, there is no way a man can sleep that little and still be that productive on the basketball court. He's got to deal with the devil. It's the only way it'll work.
Yeah. Or
or you're just that good.
Or you're just that good. What
but one of the things that people don't realize is, you know who was his left-hand man when they were over there? Chuck Daly apparently was just as active and vibrant as he was regarding the gambling and the golf.
That's probably 1/10 of the 30 for 30, right? Like one whole part should just be the dream team experience.
I would think that they would have to address the fact that the rumors that he was forced to retire because of his gambling issues.
Do you think that's true?
I don't think so. Because I don't think the league... I think they felt like they could have, if he retired, they could take the hit, but I don't think they would ever force him to retire because of what he meant to the league. And this is what I'm gonna tell you: did he gamble? Absolutely. Did he go to Vegas? Absolutely. Did he go to Atlantic City when we were in New York? Absolutely. But I never, as an individual, saw it affect his game. And as Charles Barkley always says, if you can afford to lose the money, is it really gambling?
Right. Oh, I'm not doing a value judgment on the gambling at all, but I do think that it would have been perceived as him being a problem gambler in today's times.
But I don't. To me, it wasn't a problem gambling. I think he had a competition problem.
Yeah, he was a competitionaholic.
Exactly. And part of the thing that people talked about, oh, man, he had to write so-and-so a check for $100,000 because he finally came up to somebody when he was on the golf course when he would say, hey, let's double it. Let's triple it. Let's quadruple it. And then you just see guys crumble.
Right. I'll play for whatever amount of money makes you uncomfortable. It was the famous Jordan line.
And then his thing was, you know, the first 10 or 12 holes, pick it up. That's good. Pick it up. That's good. All of a sudden, you get to 15. You're like, yeah, you might want to putt that. And you're like, it's 2 feet. Yeah, go ahead and putt that. And then a guy misses. And then all of a sudden, the guy goes from a couple thousand up to a holy cow, I'm down what? And then they're like, hey, just out of curiosity, you want to double that? And he found, every once in a while, he'd found somebody that could bank the same amount he had, but also knew they were better than him and beat him. This is a true story. So I know everybody loves the Jordan stories.
Yeah.
So I had a guy that was a former PGA player, had won on the tour, and I knew that he could beat Michael Jordan. Because even this guy, when I'd moved to Louisville, he was living in Louisville, he would always ask, how good of a golfer is Jordan? I said, he's not really that good. It's just that he knows how to press other people's buttons so they crumble. And I said, I guarantee you, you could beat him easily by 10 or 12 strokes, easily. He's like, really? I'm like, you did play on the PGA Tour, correct? Yes. You did win tournaments, correct? Yes. He can't even compete on the tour. I said, I tell you what, if you feel comfortable, I'll bankroll you in a match against MJ. He'll gladly take the match. We'll clean his clock, and we'll make enough money to set us up for the next couple years. He's like, really? And I'm like, absolutely. He's like, all right, man, I'm going to start practicing. So he started practicing. He came to me on the range one day. In Louisville, he was like, dude, I'm ready. My last four rounds were 67, 69, 70, 66. You call that you know what, and let's go play.
So you are going to bankroll a former PGA Tour golfer against Michael Jordan.
Yeah. And then I make a few phone calls. I'm telling him I got it in the works. And then all of a sudden one day he goes, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, I just can't afford to lose the money. I said, you're not going to lose. He goes, but what if? I said, all right, I'm out. And he goes, why are you out? I said, because you already have doubt. And the fact that you have doubt, I'm out. Because the fact that you have doubt before you even step on the first tee, you're going to lose, period. Because he's going to sense that. He's going to slowly chip away at that. And the next thing you know, I'm going to have to buy you an adult diaper on like the 16th hole. And this is done and over with.
How much were you willing to stake on this guy?
100 grand.
Whew. In what year is this?
This was back, I had only been out of the league 2 or 3 years. So early, like what, 2003, 2005, man. Something like that.
All right. So Jordan's old though at this point. He's in his 40s.
Yeah, but he's still, you know who he is.
Yeah.
But everybody's just my God. But I'm like, he just loved to compete. That was the bottom line. The dude loved to compete. And and sometimes you can say whatever you want, whether you put a dollar on it. You know, I mean, trading places. What was the bet?
$1. We'll come back short with Will Perdue before we have the senator. Senator Steve Stadelman, who is the chairman of the Gaming Committee in Illinois, will join the show at 3 o'clock to talk about legalized gambling in Illinois. We'll get some more stories from Will coming up next on The Score. Will Perdue in studio. You're going to hear him throughout the NBA playoffs here. McNeil and Parkins on The Score, brought to you by Casper Sleep. With a 100-night risk-free trial, you can discover how Casper has become the internet's favorite mattress. Go to Casper.com today. Everyone loves those Will Perdue stories. They love the Will Perdue stories, I'm sure. But yeah, it's the Michael Jordan stories by Will Perdue that everybody loves. What is your opinion of the impact that the legalization of sports gambling will have on current day athletes?
It means they'll make more money, period. Because every league, there's a reason why Silver has been on the leading edge of this, because he knows that it'll increase the amount of money that the league has. That means the salary cap will go up. They won't have to rely so much on TV revenue. They'll be able to increase player salaries. It's a win-win at the end of the day. And I do, like we just talked about, I think that you can consider gambling a disease just like an addiction to alcohol or drugs.
Sure.
But there's also positives to it, because what do the studies say that the approximately how much tax revenue will be generated by this in all the states?
Yeah.
How much tax revenue was generated by the legalization of marijuana in Colorado? It was over $1 billion, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was in the hundreds of millions per year. But yes, in terms of what it's been since they instituted it, it has crossed the $1 billion.
So if that means that you as a individual living in the state of Illinois means that they have because of that, they'll have the ability to lower your taxes.
Or just figure out ways to waste more money. But yeah, it's obviously a good thing. Tax revenue is a good thing,
right?
Especially if it's something that people are doing already. We're pinched with time.
Yes.
We got the state senator coming on in 10 minutes to talk about it. But let's get some thoughts on the NBA playoffs quickly. Do you think LeBron comes back and wins this series?
This is I do. But to me, it's not up to him. Up to this point, I felt like it was up to him. I think that their margin for error is now so small because of how well Boston is playing as a team. But that can change with one game. Cleveland comes back and wins this game tonight. They've done exactly what they wanted to do, at least win one game and take away home court advantage from the Celtics. Because the one thing that they've talked about is, well, for us, it's not that important. And even if they lose tonight, all Boston's done is hold home court. And Cleveland goes and wins there, too. It's all tied up. I made the mistake of going against LeBron. Never bet against him, but I've said, hey, you know what? I just don't know if he can do this by himself, and he's proven me wrong and everybody else. So the question is, how does Love play? How does J.R. Smith play? They just don't have that room for error that they have had in years past and in series past. Because everybody's like, well, what about Toronto? Toronto wins that first game, and then all of a sudden their mentality is totally different. But I truly believe that Toronto went in that series not 100% sure they could actually win. And then when they lost that 14-point lead and lost game one, they were done. Boston, they think they can actually win this. Even if they lose tonight, that's not going to affect their confidence one bit.
And then in the Western Conference, I am rooting for a long series.
Over.
It's over. You think it's over?
Yeah, I felt Houston had to win that first game to prove to them and their fans that they really could win. There's one thing asking for something. This is what we've asked for. This is why we have home court advantage. I just, when I watched that game last night, as competitive as it was, and it was competitive.
Yeah.
At no time did I sit here and feel, threatened that Houston was actually going to win the game, even though they made a run at the end to cut it to four and even tied the game, because they rely so much on Harden and Chris Paul, and they have so much isolation. And the fact that whether it's the Hampton lineup, the killer lineup, whatever you want to call it, they can switch everything, that causes a problem for the Houston Rockets. And at the end of the day, the Rockets' offense can score enough, but I just don't think they can stop. Their defense cannot stop Golden State. And at the end of the day, it's not just the Rockets that can't stop them. Cleveland can't stop them. Boston can't stop them. That team's just too good.
They're 25-3 in the playoffs with Durant, and they've never gone to a game six.
And
Steve, this is just ridiculous.
And Steve Kerr made an honest assessment. These kids, they were bored during the regular season. They were looking for challenges. They understood how good they were. Now that the playoffs have started, and we did this when we were in Chicago, they're refocused. They're re-energized. They're a totally different team. And it's just, I mean, to me, it's fun to watch. But I just feel sorry for the opponents because they give you a false sense of hope. And that's what Michael Jordan did. They give you a false sense of hope for three quarters, and then they tighten down the screws, and you're like, damn, I thought we had it there for a minute. And then you look across, and you're like, oh, yeah, they got that guy.
And for Golden State, it's, oh, yeah, they got those guys.
But at the end of the day, who's actually – and I'm curious to have you tell me, who's the best player on the court right now in that series?
Durant.
Exactly.
Yeah. Durant's the – Harden will win MVP. There's four Hall of Famers, I think, on the court. CP3, Harden, Durant, Steph.
I think there's six.
You think Klay and Draymond both are in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Just because of the team winning?
But I think also if Klay – if Draymond leaves, maybe not, because I don't think he's going to have the same impact on another team. But I think Klay Thompson could go to another team and he'd be the star.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's incredible. We'll talk to you soon, Will.
You got it.
Thank you very much. It's Will Perdue in studio with us on McNeil and Parkins. I'm very excited to talk to our next guest, as I am all of our guests. Illinois State Senator, Chairman of the Gaming Committee for the State of Illinois, Steve Stottleman, is going to come on and answer some questions about when legal sports gambling is coming to Illinois. It's coming up next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.